my talk, I will say that first I will give you a very brief introduction of the motivation. That will be one slide. Next, I will say something about the algebra of quantum actions on a Hilbert space. And then, finally, I will present quantum dynamic algebras. So that will be the main thing in my talk. So let's start with this short introduction. We will look at quantum systems as dynamical systems. This means that a system for us, in all our logical settings, dynamical logical settings, that have also been introduced in the course, in the last part of the course yesterday, a system is its potential and actual behavior. So this means we adopt a standard way of looking at systems in quantum, in computer science and in model logic. So this means as dynamic systems or as processes. Now, to reason about dynamical systems, there are things on the market in the sense that there is this logic of actions or programs that can be used, and which can be described in various ways. Like, for instance, propositional dynamic logic, PDL, which we have seen also yesterday a bit. Dynamic frames were also before introduced. Label transition systems and dynamic algebra. So today, I will focus mostly on this algebraic part. This means I will focus on a quantum dynamic algebra as a complete axiomatization of the algebra of quantum actions. Now, first I will introduce the concrete setting. This means the setting of an algebra of quantum actions based on a Hilbert space. So I will have to go over the basic notions, which I will do very briefly. So let H be a Hilbert space. Now I will introduce five notions: states, testable properties, quantum tests, unitary actions, quantum actions. Right? So for states and properties, just to make sure for those who were not in the course before, that states are rays, one-dimensional subspaces of H, and I will denote them by sigma. Logical properties are just subsets of states, so denoted by S subset of sigma. In quantum logic, one usually concentrates on properties that can in principle be tested or measured, and these are called experimental or testable properties. So within H, the Hilbert space, they correspond to closed linear subspaces. Now this family of closed linear subspaces is denoted by L of H, and there is a corresponding family L of corresponding subsets on sigma, corresponding to L of H. Yeah? Now, I will take L to be a complete atomistic orthomodular lattice, with inclusion as the partial order. The intersection is going to be the meet, and the orthocomplement is given there, where I use the orthocomplement which comes from the Hilbert space as the perp notation standing, coming from the inner product on the Hilbert space. So the join in this lattice is denoted by the symbol S cube cup. And satisfies, of course, I can define it or introduce it by using the orthocomplement over the conjunction or the meet given here. Now this will be an atomic lattice. This means I have atoms in this lattice, and the atoms are representing the states, and the states come from sigma, so sigma is a set of atoms of L. Alright? So this is the setting of the testable properties. Now I said I was going to focus also on quantum actions. I mentioned quantum actions already before. So what are these? A quantum action or a program, in our sense, is an abstraction of a real-life quantum program. This means actually we only look at the input and output behavior. and in this sense, the input and output relational behavior. This means that quantum actions over Hilbert space H, we will take the binary relations on the states induced by the projectors or by the unitaries. And this family is closed on the relational composition, and actually here should be the dot in the middle, denoting really the relational composition of two relations, one relation R and the other relation R prime. And it's closed under arbitrary unions, denoted here, of these relations. This family of quantum actions over R is then denoted by Q of sigma. Okay. Now, this composition of quantum actions is needed to represent sequential composition of programs. While unions are very useful to represent non-deterministic choice of programs or of actions. And why particularly is this of interest for us? I should stress that a measurement can be represented as the union of mutually orthogonal projectors. And since projectors are actions, hence it's very useful to have the arbitrary choice of actions in this setting. Now, as I said, what L was, the structure of the testable properties, I should also say what I take to be the structure of this Q of sigma. So this Q of sigma, the family of all quantum actions, forms a complete lattice with inclusion in which the relational union here is the join. Moreover, this forms a structure which is known to be, or is named as a quantale in the literature. This means that I take composition here as this notation. Later on, it's possible that I use only the dot. So if you see the dot or this notation, it will stand for relational composition, while this notation stands for arbitrary choice. So a quantale is a complete lattice in which this operation distributes its associative and distributes over the arbitrary choice. And actually, I should mention it's a unital quantile, so we have a unit there as well. Now, an action is called deterministic if the underlying relation on sigma is a partial function. Yeah, so I have a notion of those actions in Q of sigma which are actually deterministic relations. This means they're only closed under composition. I will denote by D the family of all these deterministic quantum actions. Now, this doesn't completely fit. So now the catch in all this, in this setting, is that these testable properties are going to be represented as specific kinds of actions within the structure Q of sigma. Since for every property S within L, so the first structure I mentioned, there is a corresponding projector onto the closed linear subspace corresponding to S. So these properties correspond to closed linear subspaces, but there is also the projector onto the closed linear subspace. This projector we denote here in this setting by the test of S. And this matches also the notation that I introduced in the courses before. So there exists a bijective correspondence between these testable properties and the projectors. This means that we can embed L in the structure Q of sigma. Yeah. Hence, from now on, really, I will identify the testable properties with their tests. So, although L is within Q of sigma, this doesn't mean that the order relation that I had on the testable properties is going to match the order relation on the quantale setting. So, these order relations differ. And this you can see that if one testable property implies another testable property in the logic of testable properties or this lattice L, that doesn't mean that one projector is going to be included in the other projector, right? So the order relation of these two structures are not the same. Now, I need various other notions that will later on be useful, and these are all necessary for my algebraic setting based on a Hilbert space H. So the first thing I need is the image of a set via an action pi, and this is given as pi of S, S meaning the set of states T which are related to S through the relation pi, since pi is indeed a relation, as I said before. Yeah. For the singletons, I will drop the brackets. Here I should say that the image of a testable property is not necessarily testable. So this means that this pi of S, which is actually very nice to have, is not necessarily always going to be inside L. So hence we will introduce another notion, which is going to be the bi-orthogonal closure of this image. So there below you can see the introduction of what's called the strongest testable postcondition, ensured by executing an action pi on property S. And this really is given by the bi-orthogonal closure of the image. Another notion, which is actually the dual of this, the dual of the image, is known as the weakest precondition. This also has been, this notation has also been used before, so I will very briefly go over it. So here, this corresponds to the set of states such that, which ensure that after performing action pi, T is a true property. If T is a testable property, this means an element of L, then pi of T is also testable. As I said, this actually is just the Galois dual, or the dual notion of the image that I introduced. Now, this in general, but for testable properties, we can strengthen this indeed. You can see that while I here use the notation for the image, here I use the notation for the strongest testable postcondition. So in the testable case, this actually, this Galois duality can be strengthened. Now, if I am encoding the lattice structure L within the set of actions Q, or within this quantile, then I should do this roughly, and I will need the notion of the kernel of an action. So the kernel of an action pi, and pi is within my quantile structure, is given by this. Just a set of states for which the image gives me the empty set, right? So, and this action here is a relation, so I define here the kernel of a relation. Now, actually, this set of states yields me a testable property, since sets of states correspond here to a testable property. So kernel of pi is a testable property within L. And actually, if you look closely, what it says is that it's impossible to perform action pi, or with other words, performing action pi necessarily will fail. Now for test actions projectors, so S question mark, the kernel corresponds to the orthocomplement of S. Since indeed, if I am in the orthogonal state, then I can never test this property. This test for this property, which is actual in this orthogonal state, will always fail. Yes. Hence, I can use this kernel notation to denote the orthocomplement. Now, this is this of the complement notation only made sense till now for the structure L of testable properties within Q, my quantile structure. So now I will generalize this for all kinds of actions, all actions in Q of sigma. This means that I will put this tilde notation to be the orthocomplement for the kernel of any program pi. And this represents here indeed an action or a test representing the test for the failure of the action pi. So I should give an interpretation to this. And it's just the extension of the interpretation that I gave before for the orthocomplement. Now, in general, of course, for arbitrary actions that I can take from my set Q, it's not going to be so that every pi is going to be bi-orthogonally closed. But for the ones which are inside L within Q, it is the case that these pi's will correspond to projectors or testable properties, and these are going to be bi-orthogonally closed, right? Now, if I have a notion of this orthogonality, then I can introduce the meat of properties of L within Q. So we have the following. So denote a family of testable properties by Pi. Then I can introduce the meat of these properties, so meet I Pi, using the orthogonal of the union of the orthogonal properties. So actually this is a way, if you see here, I am in some sense saying that we can capture the meat by doing a choice of actions. Yeah, since this union was a choice of actions and this is the meat of properties. So in a sense this is another motivation of Pirot's definition, in which he defines the meat of testable properties in terms of the choice of yes-no questions, where yes-no questions in his setting are going to be corresponding to actions, some kinds of actions in our case. As a consequence of this, I can also introduce the join. So the join I Pi is going to be the double orthocomplement of the union. In the same way as meat and choice were related, I also have a relation between composition and weakest precondition. So for any testable property P, I can say that after pi, P is true, corresponds in this setting to composition, where the dot now is my notation for composition. And this really is composition of actions. Now, within Q, I have unitary evolutions, and they can be characterized as the set of all reversible orthopreserving actions. So, when is an action within Q unitary? If and only if, of course, this holds, that if I compose it with U prime and U prime with U, then I get 1 for the unit, and also that it preserves the orthocomplement, which is the last line on the slide there. Now, I also had the notion of deterministic actions, where they were seen as partial functions. So these actions which were deterministic are the ones where the relations are definitely not branching. So they go from one state into the other state. And you can actually capture this idea by using the atoms of L, since, as I said before, the atoms of L are corresponding to the states within sigma. So this here is a way to write down that pi is deterministic, namely that the image is less or equal than Q, or that P is less or equal than the weakest precondition under this action pi of Q, where both where here I have to ensure that this is an atom. So Q here is an atom which exists. It means my way of encoding this state. Now, let's go to quantum dynamic algebra, since what I did now was really preparing the way on a concrete Hilbert space, the setting, the algebraic setting that I will use now to give my quantum dynamic algebras. So, in a way, there exists an algebraic setting for propositional dynamic logic, and our ideas are partially based on that as well. And this dynamic algebra was written with tests and actions, and this is the work of Pratt and Kohsen from 79 and also the 80s. There are a few papers on this. So we extend this idea, linking it also to work that has been done on capturing quantum systems in terms of quantails, that has been worked out in Brussels 5-7 years ago by Bob Hooke, Isaac Stubbe, Haruna Mira, people in Brussels, where I also was working in that group at the time. So their idea of capturing these systems using this language of quantails, together with these dynamic algebras of Pratt and Kohsen, together of course with the other work, since our aim was always to get a complete algebraic characterization. So I should also mention the work of Piron and Solaire and Maillet. So all this together will lead to the structure that I am going to present as a quantum dynamic algebra. Now, this is not going to be necessarily based on a concrete given Hilbert space. So I'm going to take an abstract setting. But all the ideas and how I'm going to encode it are matching the previously introduced notions that I introduced based on the Hilbert space H. So a quantum dynamic algebra is this structure, indeed, where I have this arbitrary choice written as this map here, going from the power set of Q into Q. I have composition, and I have this orthocomplement notation for every action within Q as the test for the failure of an action. So this is a kind of intuitive motivation or explanation of what this tilde should mean in this abstract sense. So this is going to be subject to a number of conditions, and those who have seen the talk yesterday of dynamic frames and quantum dynamic frames, they will probably recognize that all these conditions obviously are going to match. Since if you have a completeness result for one setting, algebraic setting, and I claim also similar result for this setting, then these, you will see that these conditions are matching somehow. So if you look closely here, there are no properties. So L is not necessarily given here. So this means I have to encode L within Q. As I said before, this can be done using exactly this tilde operation. So L is going to be the set of those axes within Q for which I have a tilde x given. So this is the family of all tests or testable properties. And I can do that for every action. Can take tilde of x. This means also that we are going to denote them specifically using p's and q's as elements of L, although they are within Q. Other similar notation that I introduced before is I'm going to put it here as a definition in the abstract setting, while the motivation was given by the concrete case. So for instance here, I'm defining the meat of these testable properties using the orthocomplement and the union. Or I can introduce the order relation once I have the meat given. I can define join as similar as before and the weakest preconditions. Now I should say that we also have a way to denote what the atoms are of L, since that's useful later on. And this is all the p's of L for which this expression holds. So this is the way to encode what an atom is. Some more notations. I had unitaries. In the same way, I will write them now as a definition in the sense that a unitary is this action which should satisfy what is written there, namely orthogonality preservation here, for instance, and the fact that by composition I get one. Similar as before, I can also define the set of deterministic programs within Q. So the set of deterministic programs is going to be defined similar as I introduced it before, using the atoms or the states for which there is a unique atom such that this precondition holds. Or this is another way to write it down. I also have a notation for image. So this is the notation here for image that I'm using. Now, similar, I have a notion of strongest postcondition, where this can be defined in using the join of all these x over p's, which was also mentioned on the previous one before, although I didn't stress it here. For the deterministic case, this image is going to be the strongest testable postcondition, and hence they are going to match. Okay. Now, what are the conditions? So this is just a setting that I give you of Q in which I can encode L, I can encode U, I can encode D, the deterministic actions, the properties, all these things. So, but I should say what the axioms are. So the axioms are the following. I have 10 axioms which correspond to the ones on the proof theory from yesterday. Namely, for instance, I should say that this was indeed a quantail. I had choice, and choice was related to conjunction. So that's what it says here. So the precondition of the choice of axis for P, so that P is true afterwards, is the same as the meet of all these, so that I get P. The precondition was related to composition. So if I get here the composition, then this just means performing one test or one action after the other one. Adequacy, this is the axiom for adequacy here. And what it says actually is that if I am in a state of the system, since I have sigma and I have atoms, so I can talk about states in this setting. So this actually says that if P and Q are true in some state and I test P again, then I end up having, which one did I use as a name for the state, namely Q. So let Q be the one which labels the state. If I perform P again, then I end up in the same state. Since if a property is true and I test it, so I project, then nothing has changed. The state hasn't been changed, that something is already true before. So all these things have a natural interpretation, and this is the corresponding axiom. So adequacy is exactly as it's written here, the axiom which corresponds to that. For superpositions, I also have an axiom, where this relation here between states is denotes non-orthogonality. So superposition says that if P and Q are different from zero, then there exists R in L such that R is orthogonal to P and R is orthogonal to Q. So now I've labeled, I don't know if the arrows are really visible. So there is a little dotted arrow from P to R and from R to Q. Both arrows stand for non-orthogonality. So I am at a state which is labeled by P. This means P is non-orthogonal to Q, to R, and R is non-orthogonal to Q. So this really captures the superposition, and this is the picture which matches this. Now for self-adjointness. Since we both know, but we all know that projectors are self-adjoint, So one way to encode self-adjointness of actions, since I have my set Q, all the actions, I have to encode an axiom which says that these actions, if they are projectors, they're self-adjoint. So for P and Q within L, this is the axiom. The axiom might look a bit complicated since it says that P is less or equal than box Q. Let me now mention, say that it's box Q. Orthogonal or orthocomplement box Q, orthocomplement P. Now there is a picture which matches this explanation of self-adjointness. And how you should read it is you are in a state P, or a state which P is true, labeled, since P is an element of L, so it's a testable property. Hence, I do a projection. This means I do a test for Q. I end up in this state here. So now I performed this part, or I'm saying what will happen after this part. So I end up in this state here. Then it says orthocomplement, so this is a relation which is not labeled. I go to this state here. Then it says, again, box Q. This means after projection of Q, I end up in this state of the complement P. So this whole axiom says that if P is true here, there is always a way to go back by means of these projections, and it's because they're self-joined, and I do the same Q here, that I indeed can go back. So the fact that I have P here, P here indicates, or is an explanation for, well, this picture should be an explanation for the axiom there. Now also for the covering law. The covering law, which was by in the courses explained by Alex in detail, is something that we can capture in our setting here by saying that if I am at a certain state and I perform a particular projection, which is called the Sasaki projection, then the end, the result of that, which in lattice theoretical terms can be written or stated in this way, is indeed a state, unique. So this means this is again an atom of L, since the atoms of L encode states. Atomicity, again, similar. This means that L is this part of Q which has to be atomic, since I needed these states. So I need an axiom to encode that as well. Now, the more difficult axiom is Mayes condition, as we saw before also in Alex's introduction. This is needed for the completeness result, or which matches the representation theorem, Bureau, Soler, and Mayer. So we need a way to encode Mayer's condition in this algebraic set. Since Mayer gave a lattice theoretic characterization, the only thing we're doing here is just translating it into these terms. Yeah, so there on the slide. Now, other 11 and 12 are two more conditions that I need to put onto my structure. And what are they doing? They're actually encoding what relations mean. So that these actions have to behave as relations on the atoms or on the states. And the atoms are within the structure. So I need an expression that imposes this. Now, if we read it, it says that if x of a is equal to y of a for all atoms, then it's so that x is equal to y. So indeed, that this is how relations are supposed to behave. Also, another condition which makes it really the capturing of a relation is that the image should commute with the union. Now, there is an equivalent reformulation of 11 and 12, which I don't really want to go into all the details, in terms of deterministic actions. Let me focus more on the representation theorem itself, or at least give you a clear statement of it. So our axioms completely characterize quantum actions or programs. And I want to stress completeness here, since that's really what this theorem is about. So every quantum dynamic algebra is isomorphic to an algebra of concrete quantum actions. This is a subalgebra of the algebra Q sigma of quantum programs over some infinite dimensional Hilbert space. So this is indeed a similar result as the one that I presented yesterday for the frames. Now, we can use this algebraic setting to reason about quantum actions, in the sense that this provides a semantics for the proof system presented yesterday briefly, and for the logic, well, the proof system was the proof system of the logic for quantum dynamic, but which I called quantum dynamic logic, QDL. Now, this is going to be the slide which briefly says what kind of language that we had for those who were not present yesterday, to know for what kind of logic we do have an algebraic setting and a completeness result. So this means that this logic is really the logic we can work with. So the syntax was consisting of two parts. We had these propositions and we had the programs, propositions phi and programs pi. In this algebraic setting, I have encoded the propositions as specific actions. So that of course doesn't matter here in the syntax. In the syntax, I want to be more explicit, so this is my choice to be more explicit in the language itself. And you see that the weakest precondition here, that this language is actually interdefined, that the weakest precondition uses the pi's here, and that as actions, I have all the projectors and I have all the unitaries. And this is the setting. Okay, so I want to finish.